Merry Christmas!
Welcome to the episode. We're here to offer up pop culture thoughts and recommendations and deconstructions and holiday joy, sort of. In today's episode of Taking It Down, we'll talk some COVID news, give some discussion on the first episode of the new episode of MTV Staple The Challenge, and lastly, wrap with our favorite bits and pieces of pop culture from Christmas. With all that ahead, let's begin. Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
Well, now that everyone is turned off, we can really talk about everyone in the world.
It's really Blaine's fault. Blaine has only himself to blame for my behavior.
Two things surging in the world right now, and that's COVID and Disney.
Hey, can we talk about, I know COVID is serious and whatever. I know Disney is whatever, but can we talk about the PP man versus the shoe throw man?
Okay.
Who's better? Who's more iconic?
PP man by 10.
But did you hear the call though? Throwing the shoe downfield
from the same hometown.
Yeah, I watched that. That's about the time I tuned in actually to that game. In case listeners don't know, we are talking about LSU visiting Florida in the swamp in a massive fog with only Amazing. One weird camera angle, the sky cam, and toward the end of the game, LSU, Florida could have put LSU away. It was a tie game. It's up in the air. Something was going to happen, but Florida sort of had control in that they had LSU stopped, and the defensive player picks up the shoe of the LSU player. The Gator throws the shoe.
20 yards. That's a good throw. For a defensive player? We should celebrate this man. Yeah, but he's specialized. You know, that's not his job.
Good throw. He's a D1 athlete, gentlemen. You know, I got to say, I tuned in about that time, too, just because people were saying, are you watching this? Like, my phone kind of started blowing up right before the shoe throw. That was one of the most cinematic college football watching experiences that I've had.
I kept dipping in and out of this game, but every time I checked the score, and it's like, hot damn, LSU's still ahead. Well, okay.
I got to say, whoever was the cinematographer, the angles were excellent. The colors were really popping against the fog. The fog was a great choice.
Cinematic.
it just worked for me. The Florida field is still very green.
It's very green. You know, they're watering it.
The temperate December down in Gainesville made it look good.
So here's another question for y'all. Ed Orgeron was not on the field playing that game, correct?
As far as I know.
He wasn't. Okay, then why was he the sweatiest person in that stadium?
He's a sweaty guy.
He was much sweatier than any of his players.
Have you ever shotgunned a Red Bull before a football game? That's the question. That would answer.
Before, during, after.
Just a wild man. What a game though.
What if this ends up like, you know, the PP man led to Mississippi State's flag being changed? Like, what could the shoe throw man lead to?
All I've got to say is college football Twitter had a boring year. It was basically just arguments about should we be playing or not. Not a lot of dudes peeing in end zones, which is usually kind of the land of college football Twitter. This is redemption. This was last minute at the buzzer, end of the season redemption.
This tells me you didn't see the BYU Coastal Carolina game.
That was fine, but it wasn't weird. I mean, it was weird, but
it was weird. They got drunk and started fighting, metaphorically. The fans were drunk. The teams probably weren't.
Yeah, but like, and it was great that they did it last minute, and that was fun and memorable. But this was like classic SEC.
This was great. Both Florida and LSU reverting to the mean at the same time and as fast as they could.
Yeah.
I feel like that game yesterday was like yesterday during the day. Not a lot of good games. Army-Navy is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. And although it does prove that the forward pass should be illegal. And
you know, I got to say, Fo Pelini brought up a good point. They keep playing this game on land, which seems to decisively favor one of the teams.
Did anyone tune in on game day when the Navy's buses were coming in and Army flew out an Apache helicopter just to kind of hang out next to them?
I'll make the bold statement that I've quit game day. Quit them.
I haven't watched game day in years.
Too bad. It's part of the ritual.
This was my first year for two reasons. Number one, their coverage in COVID times has gotten it doesn't work. It does not work.
It's because they fired all their analysts.
Well, I was about to say, and number two, they've decided who's the most bro toxic masculine guy we could get. Okay, give me four of those people. And no, I'm not for that shit.
You know, I've actually slowly been coming around to Kirk Herbstreit.
I like him.
Okay, the reason I like him is because of the way he teaches and the way he treats Coach. Thank you. The way Corso. He treats Corso. He really cares for Corso, and he really takes care of him.
No, Corso's fine these days. I mean, in his late stages, I know he's got, you know, he's had his issues.
He's two strokes in. He's mellowed out.
He's cool. And I'm fine with Desmond Howard.
I like Desmond Howard, too.
Reese is fine. It's all the other shit they bring in, and it's just not any good anymore. And Adam's been trying to tell me that for two or three years, and I finally started listening.
Well, people, I would get texts, and, you know, that because it directly competes with the Premier League.
Oh, yeah.
And this is zero question, since NBC got the rights to the Premier League. Weekend mornings, that's what I'm watching. And the fact that I can watch multiple games and go straight into College Football Saturday, that's just excellent television. And this College Game Day has turned into such a like Trump land Republican. That's clearly who they're pandering to. You know, like Home Depot signs are everywhere. There's this vision of America that's being sold. We're getting way too into the weeds here on College Game Day. But
No, I've been wanting to have this conversation. I just never thought about putting it on the agenda. So let's get it out.
I've noticed some of their – I don't disagree with anything Adam just said. I have noticed that some of their segments – have been kind of a little more, and it is kind of like, I think it goes into the sort of like bootstraps ideology, but like they've done things like featuring refugees and, you know, and it's always like the play. And I just think that like, you don't often get those stories front and center. Like I remember a couple weeks ago, this guy, one of the players, half the time was spent on his mom, who's a refugee from somewhere in Africa. I hate to say that, I don't remember. And they, you know, gave her a lot of screen time. So I do think that there is some, I don't think it's all 100% Trump world. I think that I've kind of seen some, I mean, and it's all, you know, it's very corporatist, neoliberal, you know, hard work gets you ahead. Like this is the, you know, and you can kind of interpret it as like, this is the good kind of refugee, the deserving kind. But
that's what my counter to that would be, that it's very, like you said, bootstrappy and even like white savior-y. You know,
sure.
Like this establishment is coming to the rescue in a way, but not that the actual complexion of the game is that at all.
No,
but
on the other hand, what isn't?
At a certain point, I just realized, and all these things are fine. You know, if that's how people want to go through life, and they wake up on Saturday and this is what they do, then like, good for them. I just at a certain point realized I love college football, but this program and even the advertisements around the games that I watch are not for me. You know, like I'm clearly outside the demographic that they have studied and said are watching this game, which is fine.
And when you take the crowd out of it, it really puts all their faults on display. So that's why I bailed after watching one episode.
I do think the toxic masculinity is running amok at times with these dudes. I mean, they've been
David Pollack and whoever that punter guy is they got from Barstool Sports or whatever it's called.
Yeah, that.
That guy is a huge douchebag.
I'm about as opposed to that as I could possibly be.
David Pollack is clearly
misogynist.
Yeah, if he's made any progress, it's because some handler has like told him you can't make more money if you keep saying things like this.
Yeah, exactly. And he's from Georgia. He's a Georgia Bulldog anyway, so whatever.
Yeah.
What a shame. Anyway. I love Maria Taylor.
I do too.
That's the thing. There's some
good stuff in there.
Yeah.
I guess
Wait,
you know what.
Is she still on there?
Yeah, she's still on there.
Oh, she's the best thing on there.
This may be a case of there's stuff that I like, so I can see the things I like, and I don't. Also, I kind of half watch it. So if it's something that I am not interested in, I'm just doing something else.
Yeah, that's true. That seems fair too. So, We'll deal with a few news real quick and fast before we get into our first big segment, which is going to be about the challenge. So, yeah, COVID, I think, has forced Warner Brothers' hand, right? With HBO Max, what they're doing is they're putting all their movies next year on, well, starting at the end of this year with Wonder Woman, the day of the release in theater, they're going to put it on HBO Max. So you guys got thoughts about that? What'd you think?
Well, I'm not smart enough to be able to really talk about this, but Christopher Nolan went on NPR. Christopher Nolan, obviously, not a fan of this. And he laid out a really, kind of some really compelling reasons for why this is basically going to do to movies what Spotify did to music, and that it's absolutely destructive for movies as an industry. You know, part of it is getting in the weeds with things like residuals, but he pointed out, you know, if I've got a guy who's in the actors union, I need someone to play a kind of a small role, lawyer, doctor, whatever, and he's got to know that he can make a living doing that, or I'm not going to have that actor. And the gaffers and all these guys that work on the movies, it's not that the filmmakers and stars are imperiled. It's that the people who make movies are imperiled. So it seems to kind of cut at the foundation of the industry. And then kind of the second move is, it seems from kind of insider talk, this is not really Warner Brothers. This is AT&T coming in and putting the movies on HBO Max because they want to juice HBO Max subscription, and the guy who's in charge of AT&T and Warner Brothers strategy right now says, no, we want a true Netflix competitor. Okay. We don't want to just have a good streaming service. We want to beat Netflix.
Well, if they want that, their first step should be make a deal with Roku.
Well, you know, it is kind of fascinating because I think it was the original plan for HBO Max. We would say we're going to see growth, and this is going to make something like $2 or $3 billion a year. And this guy said, unacceptable, Netflix makes $6 or $7 billion. We want to be Netflix. So it's probably bad.
Going back to the Nolan thing, I wonder what he would say about in this era. You know, I would have gone to see his film this year, but I did not because we're in a pandemic era. Less people mm-hmm. have put eyes on it. Could he not have made a deal? I'm sure he will make a deal with some streaming service at some point to release it. I understand his argument about the pie getting small. As someone who is basically the gaffer of the music world, I totally, or the bit player, whatever, like, I get it that there is less money, but I also wonder, what would he say? I mean, at least the movies are coming out, you know, for the foreseeable future, where that was uncertain before, like a Wonder Woman, I'm going to watch that Christmas Day, probably, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I'll be sitting around bored. whereas I maybe would have gone to the theater, maybe not, but delaying it, I don't, like, what is his alternative? You know, like, I think there's a lot of people who are asking this about different mediums, but is it not better for the guy who is a bit player who plays lawyers to have a job versus none of these movies coming out or the whole industry just grinding to a halt for 2 years?
Sure. I think the thing he makes is that this is the start of an undercutting of the long-term health of movies and movie theaters. And basically what he says is that this is striking and directly undercutting the unions and so the method that people rely on to know that they can make this a long-term proposition.
So it's a bit of a, once the genie comes out of the bottle on this, how do you put it back in? Is that kind of his argument?
I think that's part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that makes sense that these giant corporations are, like you said, they're looking at Netflix as how much they're bringing in every year and trying to get there, that, you know, a pandemic can be used for business good, even if that's morally shaky.
Absolutely. Yeah. So basically, I thought it was interesting. His point was, when a movie is sold to a television station 20 years after it was made, payment is made to the people who collaborated on that film. Cool. So we've got residuals and all these things that people can work on something, you know, 20 years ago and know that it's still going to be maybe paying for them. And these are important principles that when a company starts devaluing the individual assets by using them as leverage for a different business strategy, without first figuring out how those new structures are going to have to work, it's a sign of great danger for the ordinary people who work in that industry. And I think you can say maybe, you know, okay, maybe he's being alarmist or it's a slippery slope, but I think that that was kind of a little bit what happened with Spotify, where it's like, we're going to have a new model for streaming. We're going to have a new model for music, but we're not really going to figure out how people can make a living out of it. It's apples and oranges, but I mean, I'm going to watch these movies too.
Yeah. Like as a consumer, I'm not mad about it.
Yeah. That was my question mainly to you guys was as a guy sitting on the couch, how do you feel? There's a mindset I think that comes with streaming that sometimes diminishes the movie if it goes straight to streaming. Does that happen with you? Do you ever think to yourself something along the lines, oh, that's on Disney Plus, I can watch it whenever, rather than, oh, it's going to be in the theater for 3 weeks, I better go see it?
I think for me, there's been a bit of a reset this year, and I've observed it. Again, I relate to this via what's happening in the music industry, but say like a Bandcamp release at one time may have been seen as, oh, it wasn't, if they didn't press the records, if it's not getting a bunch of press, if blah, blah, blah. This year, people have kind of seen through and said, well, but this is a way to deliver a product to me. And maybe even for, it's different in the music industry, but for this person to make more money. So it's kind of legitimized these things that before may have been viewed as marginal or kind of outside the mainstream. And I think for me, that streaming films and television and all this stuff have kind of done the same thing. Like, of course, I want to see a Christopher Nolan in the theater. Of course, Dune looked incredible, that trailer, and I would love to see that in the theater. But I'm also probably going to watch Dune day of, and I'm going to watch Wonder Woman day of. And I think maybe there's been a shift in our perception. I don't know if it lasts post-pandemic of like, things being able to be an event, whereas before it was like, oh, me and the rest of the country are going to the theater this weekend to see this. Now it's like, if you want to check Twitter, you have to watch this movie, you know?
I will say as a guy with a 3-year-old, it's a boon. It's a boon to me. So,
well, I wondered about you we both like the theater going experience. Like it's fun to go in and smell the popcorn and sit in the dark and watch a movie, if that the silence wasn't also appreciated for the movie going experience being at home, you know, if even just with two dogs, like we're gonna have to pause the movie at some point.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Or yeah, exactly. And it forces you to put down your phone, which I'm pretty good at doing if I'm involved with the show or movie. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. We'll talk more on it. But speaking of streaming, you know, hot damn, Disney dropped enough news to last a year's worth of speculation or discussion. And we'll just go rapid fire here. If you're caught up on that news, it probably took a day or two to do. Anything that you're excited about or stands out to you, Adam?
It's funny because Thursday afternoon, they announced that ABC would be taking over the rights to SEC. What was formerly SEC on CBS. And so for the next 24 hours, when people talked about the Disney news, my stupid Alabama brain was like, oh, they got the SEC primetime game. That's what they're talking about. So I was just like seeing these articles go by, like, why are they talking about it? So I know that they did something big and also did whatever everybody else is talking about. So I've been celebrating the demise of Gary. I haven't caught up.
Our listener 87 Jetta commented and attributed the downfall of SEC on CBS to us.
I love it.
I think it was I do think it was Saban watching the Bama game. Like he said, he had it on mute, but that was probably just him being like
he had a private feed, didn't he?
Yeah. He had the private feed and he had the CBS game on simultaneously.
Which probably chapped his ass more than ours. So, Donovan, from the news, anything that caught your eye or you're like, oh, this is good, can't wait?
You know, this is going to be me very much being hypocritical. Okay. And a huge hypocrite, but I feel like I went on a hunger strike and Disney's force feeding me content until I explode. Mm. That being said, and you know, it is kind of, it's almost exhausting to see all of this because it's just all the air in the room. And I have been not super thrilled with, you know, Disney's Star Wars, you know, oh, Solo, it's all the things you love. It's Han, it's the castle, you know, it's just like a word salad of nostalgia. That being said, I like the guy. I liked Rogue One, and I like the guy from Rogue One. So, okay. Maybe we'll get a fun series with that.
The Cassian Andor series,
yeah, which I believe is titled Andor.
Yes, it is.
Which I thought was a typo of Endor for a little bit before I figured
it out. One letter away, wasn't it?
You know, there's some interesting ish FX news that came out. I'm sure we're all gonna go to Disney Plus this weekend and watch Safety, which is about Clemson.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, you didn't know about this? Disney Plus released their movie Safety about a Clemson safety.
No.
Yep. Nah. Turn on Disney like me. But it feels like, you know, Disney's taken up all the air in the room. You know, they've shuttered Miramax. I don't think Touchstone exists anymore. If you want to make them, and I think there's some point people have noted that like promising directors will make one or two movie and then just get stuck in the Disney system. And I mean, again, this is me being a huge hypocrite, because like I've watched all the Marvel movies, I've seen the Star Wars movies, but there does start to be a sameness to them, right? And I wonder, I don't know, there are other movies out there, and it'll probably be harder to see them.
I am pumped about all of the Marvel shows, particularly Secret Invasion. I'm interested to see how that develops, because I feel like what they'll do is they won't pull the Netflix card and do 10 or 12 episodes when they can get it done in 5. And that seems like, and getting that weekly really feels like it could do a little bit more than the movies do. I went and watched Endgame the other night, which I rarely do anything like this, where I go back and watch something I've seen a couple times. And, you know, the acting is really good in that movie. Yes, it is. There is this sameness. You know the good guys are going to win. But other than a few things that I found wrong with Avengers Endgame, the acting really pulled that movie together.
Look, I didn't say I didn't enjoy it.
Oh, okay. No. Well, and I'm not saying that either. It just so happened that I think it was Thursday or Wednesday night, maybe the night before, all this news dropped that I didn't even know was coming. It just so happened to watch Endgame, and I was just amazed that these actors, and they did a good job of setting up and foreshadowing some of the things that happened at the end of that movie. And I was like, wow, this stuff's really well done, even though the storyline is a very predictable beginning, middle, end. My eye went to the Secret Invasion, and you name any of the Marvel television shows.
Sure.
And they looked promising, every one of them, and a few of the Star Wars things. But I guess most importantly, is the in terms of FX stuff, is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is going to get 4 more seasons. So there.
Who would have guessed when that show started that it would one day be owned by Disney? I mean,
you couldn't have guessed that.
Disney's It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, distinctly remember Donovan being very into that show when we were in college.
It's true.
And I think like you watched season one and you were like, this is really funny.
Oh, it is.
Season two started, and it was like appointment viewing for you.
Absolutely. Yep. For some, like, I was on that train early for some reason.
Well, yeah. Season two is when they bring Frank in.
So yeah.
It gets, like, noticeably even funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there you go. Donovan, this is mainly for you. Have you watched the most recent Mandalorian that aired on Friday?
I did. Did you like that they were doing the Wages of Fear?
I'm unfamiliar with that, but I did read up on it.
Oh, okay. I thought that was kind of fun.
And yeah, supposedly it was really well done, and like almost there were some shots that were just taken from that movie.
Yeah. Which again, it's like this is me being a huge hypocrite, because here I am complaining that Disney's not making the Wages of Fear, and also being like, did you get that it was King Lear in Star Wars?
Yeah, exactly.
I reserve the right to be super inconsistent.
Donovan, do you want to talk about King Lear?
No. It's one of the few Shakespeare plays I haven't read. So,
well, neither has Adam.
But I want to.
I read most of it.
This is the second King Lear reference I've had this week where I thought, oh, I need to read that. The other was apparently in that Bob Dylan movie, Masked and Anonymous from like 2004. There's a huge King Lear plot line that I totally missed.
But Blaine, you should actually read King Lear. It's not
super
long.
I think I might. Yeah.
Yeah, you should do it.
I read most of it in my defense, Donovan.
Okay. All right.
But back to The Mandalorian, I'm gonna double down on my complaint. And
there
was no fucking Baby Yoda. And
hey, he has a name.
Grogu. Yeah, there was no Grogu. And did you notice how exponentially better this episode was because of that? Because whether or not it allowed them to do this, this is what happened. They started looking into the gray areas of boots on the ground kind of Star Wars figure with the Mayfield character played by Bill Burr. Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that Bill Burr could almost save Star Wars in my
estimation? I thought he was kind of at the edges of his ability in this one.
You think so?
I thought so, yeah.
Well, I enjoyed his presence on screen.
No, I didn't dislike it. I like the Space Confederate guy.
Let me just say this. If you give me the choice between Grogu and Bill Burr, I'm going to take Bill Burr every single time. Yeah, and I saw online a lot of people raving, critics saying that this was one of the best episodes of the series. And I dare I say, no Baby Yoda, that's why.
Look, the presence of Baby Yoda is what allows this show to be appointment viewing at my house where my wife and I can both watch it together. So
I better not say any more then.
I'm just like, if Baby Yoda is the price I have to pay, then
yeah,
so be it.
I got
also,
you.
I kind of like Lone Wolf and I kind of like the Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah, you get all the references though.
You weren't crazy about the Robert Rodriguez episode?
I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it also made.
I think each episode this season's getting better and better and better. And I'm actually I've complained about it, but I also never miss an episode on Friday. Even I watch it on Friday as soon as I can, and it's quality. It's so entertaining, and I'm saying this in part to kind of say, hey, Adam, you might want to finish it and catch up. It's actually gotten quite good. I know, but it's
I will say
nothing.
Good. I know we're going to talk Christmas in a bit, but I strongly associate Star Wars with the Christmas season and the beginning of summer, both somehow simultaneously. I don't really get it, but yeah, maybe it would be a fine Christmas season watch.
Yeah, I've started to do the same thing, especially with The Mandalorian. It's starting to remind me, it's clicking in my lizard brain, Christmas, Mandalorian, Christmas. So, let's shift gears, guys. I didn't want to spend a lot of time on The Mandalorian because I think it's just good now. So I'll leave it at that. One more episode on this season. We've got to save some time for dun-dum-dum, the challenge, double agents. And the reason why we're spending some time on this is we have roped Donovan into at least watching the first episode.
I watched an episode.
He watched an episode, but that's all that's aired. So
I like Big T.
Okay. There he is, opening salvo fired. He likes Big T.
Everyone else is dead to me.
Okay. That's your starting point. All you got to do is find someone you like and you're in. So
let me ask y'all. Natalie has said at least 3 or 4 times, if y'all talk the challenge,
yeah,
she wants in.
Okay.
Should I call her into the room?
Absolutely.
Bring her in. Whoa, right. Surprise guest.
This is amazing.
Let's do this. And while he's getting her in the room, just to set up, we do cover the challenge with regularity every Thursday. Our head writer, our originator, one of the originators of the Alabama Take, T.D. Wood, covers it and does a really good job. I think he does some of his best writing with the challenge. So join us there. And we've roped Donovan into. I was kind of in the same seat Donovan is in last season because I hadn't watched it in 10, 15 years, maybe
I've
12.
I've never watched it.
But you've never watched it.
I've never seen it.
Man, how did you miss it in like the early aughts? How did you?
Look, I never even heard of it until y'all got into it.
You do understand that it was like originally like they would grab some people from the real world and grab some people from Road Rules and like pit them versus each other in like games.
I have access to Wikipedia.
I don't know what Google is my running joke on in our group text.
No, so, like when y'all started talking about the challenge, I looked it up because I'm like, what the hell?
Okay,
is this? Never heard of it before.
Okay. Well, let's
this
start.
Year or last year.
I want to start there, and then I bet Natalie will be on mic and on headphones. So, Donovan, what did you think? Let's go, and then I'm going to turn it over to Adam and Natalie.
What an odd hybrid of a show,
isn't it?
Where it has like the weird, almost to me like grating MTV reality, where you know they're cutting away from the action every 10 seconds, but at the same time, like you know you kind of get it like. You start watching it and you're like, wow, there's some really weird people. Like, it's an interesting mix of folks here. And I don't know. It's the talking heads during the actions part was kind of killing me, though. Like when they're doing the trying to figure out the wires, you know, because it's like they didn't just let you watch the action. It was constantly like, I'm going to comment on what's going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, when I returned to it, I say last year, but last season, which was actually in March of this year, I didn't like the first episode a ton, but it got a lot better and addictive. So let's turn it over to our podcast here, experts. Adam, Natalie, what'd you think on the first episode? And then maybe Donovan can chime in on what he saw as well.
We're here. Natalie, what did you think of this first episode?
I thought it was a great first showing. TJ comes out strong, looking good. I'm going to get a little closer. Is this better? Okay. look, TJ looks good physically, obviously. I mean, that whole montage of him walking in, this man comes in with confidence. He's obviously been spending a lot of time doing some open mic nights and some bar in Las Vegas playing some killer tunes. So,
have we talked about this on the show? That he, if you go on his Instagram, you can see him. He's like one of the main patrons of a open mic night somewhere in Las Vegas where
he plays guitar.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he's a cool guy, man. He seems like a genuinely nice kind of guy.
I think he kind of like hosts the open mic night, or he like he's the patron. I don't know. Very funny side note there.
That's amazing. That makes me like him 100%.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got clearly a better stylist coming in. He's not wearing his graphic tees anymore, which is, you know, TJ in a graphic tee is fine, but this whole like, fancy coat situation was great. I thought the episode was wonderful. I think we are set up for a really great season. I think the twist at the end is going to change some arrangements of some previous plans. And I'm excited about where it's going.
Now, the twist at the end that you're referring to is the ability to switch partners after elimination. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
All right. So the whole setup of picking your own partner, more or less, it has never really happened before outside of Fresh Meat. But for people, which is long in the past, Donovan's smirking because he texted me. I was trying to kind of get him up to speed via text. And he said, this is like a comic book. Like there's 36.
Yeah.
Like there's lore here.
Yes,
there is. Like if you just come in cold and you're like, who is this unhinged looking mafia guy, CT? You know, like how do you know that he has one of the greatest reality arcs in the history of the genre? But I will say that when we were spitballing at the end of last season about what would be a great format, Natalie kind of called this one.
Oh yeah,
I mean I think so. The pick your own partner, kind of an allies theme in a way, even though that kind of backfired on CT and Cam there immediately.
Yeah, which
sure did.
Is kind of great because I mean she comes in. Wants CT, doesn't work out, obviously. And so she comes up with this plan of, all right, well, if that's the case, then we're going to get rid of all the champs. So that's her game plan going forward. Until she finds out that she could possibly get CT back or another one of the champs. So maybe that whole plan goes out the window.
The twist, plural twist, were almost too much for me because I remember leaving the episode after an hour and a half and thinking, wait, what are the rules now?
I think I'm going to have to watch multiple episodes to really get my head around the ins and outs, and which I appreciate because it's also going to take them, you know, a lot of them have done this so many times that they can size up how to take advantage of the rules immediately and find the path of least resistance. And I think it's going to take them a minute. I think Wes was the only one who said it was beneficial to him to say this, but I think he would have said it anyway. Let's not take a shot the first week. Let's just play it safe because I don't think all the twists are out of the way. It's some wily veteran stuff.
So back to Donovan, what drew you to Big T? That he's currently your favorite. What's happening there?
I liked when she couldn't remember her partner's name.
And her partner was asleep on the couch in the middle of partying. Joseph. Great. So Joseph is new, right? Am I wrong?
He is, yeah.
Adam and Natalie.
Yes.
Both on mic here. What did you think about CT being put in first week? Because I think we're all huge CT fans here. I think we are. And, you know, he volunteered to go in last season, like in week two or three, I think. And it's early. What do you think?
I think it's early. I think last season he has already said on camera that he was maybe not in the best place around that filming. I know he thought that I have to get this Red Skull eventually, and there's no point in being here if I don't have one. A lot of the vets said that. They were willing to go in earlier than normal. This season, I was pissed that it looked like Wes and CT were going to go up against each other. I mean, it's not the matchup that it would have been 10 years ago, but I still don't like to see two. You know, if I had my way, at the end of the season, there's 10 Red Skull or 10 Gold Skulls, whatever they are this season. They would all be four people. Like I said this on TD's post in our confessional. They would all be for the MTV OGs, if you will, and Kyle. But that's who I want at the final.
Yeah, Kyle. Kyle with his golden teeth.
Yeah. What did you think, Natalie?
Well, now all I can think about are those upsetting teeth that Kyle has. He's like glow in the dark. No, CT going in, you know, it was frustrating. I mean, I'm fine. If, like, the CT West matchup, I want to see it. I'm always about that. That would have been super great. Not great for the first episode. West kind of laid that out. You don't know the rules yet. They didn't know this twist was coming. But the biggest upsetting thing is I hate these like big decisions when they're made purely off of like spite. Like Cam just got her feelings hurt and decided to do a thing. And it was stupid.
Yeah.
Cam, she's been catching heat a bit on social media for being overconfident. And, you know, that's like a fine line to walk. You always wonder, why am I perceiving this person to be overconfident? I think people maybe need to check themselves a bit on that, but you know, it may not have been the best week one gameplay. It's backfired in the past. This used to be the mode of doing things for Nelson and Corey, say. And they've kind of figured out that you have to lay low early and then start making moves. So who knows?
Well, the overconfidence backfired on Ashley. So I'm eager to hear more from Donovan as the newcomer this time around to the show.
I got to, before we say this, or let him give his thoughts, this would have been an overwhelming first episode to watch, like with all of the rules and all of the cast, because, I mean, more than half the people barely were on screen, and you're trying to keep track of, you know, he doesn't really know that CT is, like, the character yet. What was that like?
Yeah, that's kind of basically what I was going to say, is my feelings about this are more, I got to see two or three and kind of let the storyline develop. You know, if Adam hadn't given me some context, like, I wouldn't have known that, like, okay, these are the guys that, like, you should watch because they, you know, they've got the history here. Yeah, it was the literal challenge, right? And then you've got the like, game-playing part of it, and you've got although I did kind of throughout it, if I could have made one change that might have enhanced my viewing experience, it's cut down on the confessionals during the physical events and keep about as much as there was when they're strategizing and partying and all that. But I found that kind of like, wait, what's going on here? Like, and also I'm trying to learn 20 people. Although I realized, you know, every time someone comes on screen, you get their name. Can we have that in movies? Cause I often can't tell people apart. Especially if it's like, I'm watching Black Hawk Down, buddy, I don't know who you are. You're dirty. You're white. You're wearing a, You're wearing a uniform? No idea.
Really could have used that in Band of Brothers.
For real. I've got Band of Brothers faith blindness. Those are my two worst.
Well, that's a lot more on the challenge each week on the Alabama Take every Thursday. And we'll probably bring it up a lot here as well, because I'm intrigued to see where Donovan goes with his thoughts.
Same. And I think it's also set up to be a very strong season.
Very. It seems like it. Once we get the twist under our belt and Donovan gets the characters under his belt, I think we're going to really be fascinated by it. We'll see, though. All right, we're going to go into our break. And on the other side, we're talking Christmas or holiday season, whatever you wish. All right, a big thank you for listening. It's the giving season. And you may have noticed we don't do ads. We still have bills for podcast hosting and website maintenance and stuff. But if you'd like to help, please visit buymeacoffee.com/thealabamatake. Or should we just start a Patreon related to the Alabama Take? I'll take ideas and opinions. I've actually been thinking about that. But anyway, visit our site, The Alabama Take, where soon you'll start seeing a lot of year-end lists and the best and worst of 2020. There'd be a lot more bad than good. You never can tell, but you should visit and read those pieces by our writers. So let's get back into our discussion. Okay, it's the holiday season, gentlemen. With that, I'd like to say to everyone who's listening, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, or if you celebrate none of that shit, just Happy none of that shit.
Happy Winter Solstice.
Yeah, yeah.
Friends.
That's good. Good for me, anyway. We want to discuss our favorite bits from pop culture that involve Christmas or the holiday season. But before we do, Adam, you're kind of knee-deep in it. We planned this podcast last week, so you really were knee-deep in it last week. You helped record a Christmas song recently.
I thought that you were making fun of my lack of Christmas spirit when you started introducing this idea.
No, you have actually put to tape or put to whatever a Christmas song now.
Yeah. My friends in Penny and Sparrow, Andy and Kyle, did a Christmas song, and they usually do a Christmas concert, which obviously was off this year, and they ended up doing a pretty profoundly strange live stream instead. So kudos to them. They did that earlier this week. But they put out a song called Nice Christmas, which is...
No, Neat Christmas.
Oh, Neat Christmas, yeah. Let's have a neat Christmas. Sorry, I'm still waiting for that coffee to kick in here. But it definitely kind of satire of the usual Christmas song, and it was really fully formed when they had me play on it, but I thought it was pretty funny because they nailed all of the like the Christmassy tones and the melodies and all of that, and they told me that they wanted a guitar solo at the end. There's like a key change, which is key changes are hilarious to me at this point after growing up in church, and that's like when you're really supposed to feel it, you know, and that's kind of a holiday thing as well, but they wanted like a real, they said like a busy triumphant guitar solo at the end that almost kind of like mimicked like a horn part from a Christmas movie. So I did my best, but it was funny to participate in for sure.
When did you guys record this?
I mean, they sent me a pretty fully formed track in November, so it was more last minute than expected. I think it was November. Yeah.
And I've always wondered what recording or filming a holiday themed piece of art outside of the season felt like.
They filmed the holiday thing like sometime in late summer, I think, which had to have been, I'm trying to remember if I've played on holiday stuff before, because I have the same image of like it being July in Alabama outside and you're inside shaking sleigh bells and stuff, and it just feeling very disjointed from reality. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think about Christmas or the holiday season? Whatever you want to say, it doesn't matter to me. What do you think about it in general? Adam, are you the Scrooge of us? Donovan might be too. I'm not sure.
I don't know about Scrooge. We don't, you know, it's fine. It is what it is.
Donovan?
2 years ago, I drove an hour and a half to Bethlehem, Connecticut to stamp all my Christmas cards with the Bethlehem, Connecticut post office stamp. So
I think that answers the question, doesn't it?
He just laid down the gauntlet, man.
Wow. I have gone through three phases, which the first one was kid and through high school. I loved it. Couldn't wait. It made my heart warm. Then as a college and deep into adulthood, I hated it. And it caused depression into like deep depths I don't think I can vocalize. And then after meeting my wife, who's just joyous with holiday love, I loved it again, and it there is still a little tiny bit of depression, but also it's a nice warm mix of nostalgia that enveloped me. So that's been my three phases.
When you got a kid now, that's almost like being a kid yourself.
It is, and it is. It's cliche, but it's true. So what do you guys have for your favorite pop culture holiday moments? We'll go to Adam Donovan and then circle back around if we need.
We were talking about favorite holiday movies, and I got to say that I am also similarly softening with age. Probably didn't want anything to do with a holiday film for a long stretch. Now, you know, we saw the, have y'all seen this Netflix thing? Let me make sure I get the title right here.
Well, you've already butchered your friend's song title, so just say whatever you want to call it.
Oh, the Christmas Chronicles? Yeah, that shit slaps.
No, the Netflix show, The Holiday Movies That Made Us.
Oh, no. Yeah, you were talking to us about this. I didn't watch it. Tell me more.
The first one that we watched, there's only two episodes so far. They're long, like an hour 15, was on Elf. And something about that movie, the specific brand of New York Christmas that it conveys, and it marries that with like that old claymation style, which they talk about in this doc. But that comes recommended. I think probably all of us will watch at least part of Elf in the next month. But that doc is a lot of fun too. If you wanted to pull that up, I know that's not a real solid classic answer, but just wanted to plug that show while were talking Christmas.
That's the kind of thing I want to hear. Anything I haven't thought of, Donovan.
So, I don't know if I can go favorite, because I love a lot of stuff like, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, because it's an actually good, well-acted movie, right? Or maybe you're in the mood for Christmas in Connecticut, because, oh man, Barbara Stanwyck is, you know, I'm a married spud. but I was kind of, you know how you kind of said there is kind of like that Christmas melancholy, right? Like you get it in a... The best, most perfect distillation of it is Charlie Brown Christmas. But I'm thinking of two movies in particular that I will probably watch around this time. In Bruges, which is just a great kind of...
That's one of my favorite movies.
It's great. It's got
fairy tale, isn't it?
amazing Brendan Gleeson performance. Ralph Fiennes is very funny in it. But it's also like... It's kind of got this feeling of being adrift and waiting, where everything is decorated and ready for Christmas and you're just not feeling it. And then Whit Stillman's first movie, Metropolitan, takes place between Christmas and New Year's, really, in debutante season in New York City. And it just has this kind of, you know, this kind of perfect like post-holidays crash feeling to it. It's great. So two melancholy watches for Christmas.
I like them. So I'm with you with It's a Wonderful Life. Any of that old and pretty good Christmas stuff it gets me. Frosty the Snowman, Charlie Brown Christmas, you name it. But I do have this very specific memory of MTV.
This should be good. I'm ready for this.
It's actually, I thought it was good, and I can't find it I don't think I can find it anywhere. I haven't looked.
Break in Cancun.
No. Adam, you'll relate to this, I think. It's MTV, or it might have been CBS, or both. They were promoting that very first volume of A Very Special Christmas. And I remember as a kid recording this on VHS, and those are still some of my favorite Christmas songs, a few of them. And Adam, you might remember it because it's where U2's version of
Christmas Baby, Please Come Home.
That's it. That's where first I'd heard of that version. They might have recorded it earlier and then put it on that or gave it to that album for charity. But, and you could probably tell me more, but Do you guys remember? Did you ever see this? That might have been. I was about probably 8 or 9, so it might have been way before your time.
I was gonna say I don't think I was born.
Yeah, it.
I probably know a lot of those songs.
Well, this one, yeah, you do. Well, yes, because the album has about 2 or 3 volumes at this point, mm-hmm. if not 4. And the show they did to help promote it would intercut clips of famous Christmas movies, and it was my first introduction to It's a Wonderful Life, because they had this scene where Jimmy Stewart's character was yelling at Old Man Potter, right? Isn't that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was yelling, and instead of saying, they did a little voiceover where he said something to the effect of, "Yeah, it's going to get you too," was the original line, or "It's going to happen to you too." And then they somehow managed to slip in the band U2, and then that was their introduction to the video of Christmas, Please Come Home. So
amazing.
Yeah, for some reason that just sticks with me. And I guess because I recorded it on VHS and watched it every year. So that's.
Let me tell you, I'll give you some background information on this record, since me and Donovan were ignorant prior to 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Released in October 1987. Okay. So for you two, that
okay, 87.
I wasn't born yet.
I would have been, I guess, what, 9? No, 10?
That would have been during the Rattle and Hum Joshua Tree era of U2. I know.
Oh yeah,
I know the video. They're on the Joshua Tree stage,
okay. And Bono's wearing the top hat, right, and long hair.
He is.
I remember this clearly, black and white.
Yep. But it looks they clearly shot it while they were shooting what became Rattle and Hum. Like it's the same film quality, all that kind of stuff. There's some highlights here from the record: "Winter Wonderland" by the Eurythmics. "Do You Hear What I Hear?" Whitney Houston. Bruce and the E Street Band, "Merry Christmas, Baby."
Is that where that comes from?
The Coug, John Cougar Mellencamp, "I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus."
I remember that one clearly.
Gabriel's Message, Sting. Sting did that one.
That one's lost.
Santa Baby, Madonna.
That's where that came from? That's the worst version.
Yeah, it is. There's some bad versions of songs on there, but is Tom Petty's Christmas Time song?
It's not, which is odd because this whole thing was a Jimmy Iovine production.
Okay, he's on Volume 2 then.
Must be, because they got Stevie Nicks closes out the record with Silent Night.
I really like that Tom Petty song.
Yeah, just, Christmas Time Again.
Yeah, it just Tom Petty is so good at writing songs that just feel like a, I don't know any way to put this, but just like a jam. Where it's a Christmas song, but you're also like, that's a genuinely good song. Yeah, like, I just want to hang with it.
He did kick off the second record. He was track 1, side 1, Christmas All Over Again. Mm-hmm. Which also featured Frank Sinatra and Cyndi Lauper, Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Okay.
Interesting.
That I don't remember either. I guess just the U2 song really stands out to me, or the U2 version of that song. And I still like that version of that song. A lot of people shit on YouTube, but I like that version.
That's the finest Christmas song. That is the ultimate Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. I mean, even that statement, that's like the warm fuzzies of a Spectre production combined with melancholy.
And I've seen you perform that song live.
If somebody makes me do a Christmas song during a concert this time of year, that's what you're getting.
Why not?
I absolutely love that version of the U2 song of the U2 version of that song, because the way Bono has no chill in that song, and it's great. Like it's just like you, and I think you could probably say that with Bono for a lot of things. Like you either get nothing or everything, but he's like howling.
But not to get into the weeds of U2 history here, but he was more of a full-voiced singer all through the 80s and then kind of developed maybe a bit more of a touch in the 90s that he would have used in that situation. But
that makes sense.
Like, I think they recorded it on tour, probably, so he was probably used to singing loud like that, letting it rip.
It's great.
It's just a theory.
I'm going to toss out 2 Christmas holiday moments that I'm sure you're both familiar with, and you can comment on them, okay?
The night Santa died?
like personally for you?
Yeah, like...
Like when your older brother told you?
No, it was like, it was 63, I mean, I've only seen clips, right? But it was what, like 62, 63, Santa was visiting Dallas, and he made the decision to ride in an open an open top car.
No, I think right? that was JFK.
I think that was Santa.
All right, I think we're gonna agree to disagree on that.
Anyway, there was a shot from the book deposit, but also I think there was a shot at Santa on the grassy knoll. But anyway, they had to swear in LBJ as Santa after that.
Anyway, like, I've seen clips. Well, that is kind of a okay segue. One of the big ones that stands out to me in recent years is Mad Men episode that ends with Peggy Lee's version of Christmas Waltz. Still gets me.
There's some quality Christmas content on.
Yeah,
Mad
I think
Men.
I think there were two really episodes where they focused it in and around the holiday season. And the other one that also stands out to me, because again, I was 8 or 9 or whatever, was that Simpsons first episode where Homer loses his mall Santa money, but ends up with Santa's little helper.
Yeah.
And that's the first episode. And it aired around Christmas.
Simpsons roasting on an open fire.
I can remember watching this. Okay, guys, I'm gonna delve into my childhood way too much here, but I can remember watching this on the satellite at our house. And when I say satellite, I mean that huge NASA-sized thing you put in the backyard. So get this. Around that time, this probably was in January or February even, around that time, the motor went out on our satellite. So what you would do is when you would change certain satellite positions, it would change the rotation of the or the position of the actual dish. Well, the motor went out on ours. And my older brother, 10 years older than me, would force me as a child to go out into the snow or cold and crank the dish until crank it until I had it in the right position. He would yell out the back door, it's good. I can watch.
Pretty sure that's a Jason Isbell song.
Anyway, that legitimately happened to me, and I can vividly remember putting on boots that were 2 sizes too big for me to go out in the snow and crank the fucking satellite to put it on the right channel. And that's when I first encountered Fox and The Simpsons, when we had that huge satellite dish. And I remember that first episode pretty clearly and watching it. So I'm going to put you guys on the spot to rap. Here we go. What's your favorite Christmas song? Ready? Go.
Oh, Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. I've already stated my case on this. Okay. Not even close for me.
Donovan?
A favorite Christmas song is Low's Just Like Christmas.
Wait a minute, what?
The band Low?
Yeah,
their song Just Like Christmas.
Yeah, I think I've heard it, and it's an odd choice. Why? Why that one?
I think it's a great song. Okay. Like it sounds, and I like Low, but okay. Song itself is really good.
Gotcha. I think mine is maybe even because of Mad Men, but it's Peggy Lee's Christmas Waltz. And I'll take Frank Sinatra's version too. It's good.
Sure.
It's a good season for the Crooners.
There you go. Thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun. We had a week off inadvertently last week, but it might have helped our spirits. That's all we have, people. Hopefully you're staying in for the holiday season. Don't spread COVID. Take care of yourselves and others. Wear a mask. Keep your distance. Don't be an asshole. We'll talk to you in a week where we're sure to comment much, much more on this season's The Challenge, as well as some other things we've watched, seen, or heard.
Do you think we could get the Shoe Throw Man on The Challenge?
Wes, I have emailed him, and he has not come back to us.
No, the Shoe Throw Man from the Florida game.
It's a big week for shoes.
I thought you meant CT throwing the shoe into Wes's face.
That was fine. I saw it 6 times. No, I want the PP Man and the Shoe Throw Man on The Challenge now.
We'll see what we can do.
All right, we should write some letters to our congresspeople, I suppose.